Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I have a charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
It's hard. If you have not processed your grief, you can't breathe. There was a rock in my throat for so long. I could not tell this story. I could not breathe. I never thought I'd be 32 years old and have lost a whole husband. We're giving people permission to not be okay. I want to love now, do it now, and just experience everything now. I dress how I want to dress. I do what I want to do. I move authentically in work, in business. People like, I said, when I show up, you know, I'm going to show up now just like this. So don't try to ask me to change or to do anything differently, because I'm not going to do that, because I have to be myself. So I think it's giving me just more power to be who I want to be, and letting that be okay.
This is The Secret Lives of Black Women. I'm Sharla.
And I'm Lauren.
And today we're talking more about managing grief.
Last episode, we got some tips from licensed grief counselor Keisha Wells about ways that people can get the most out of therapy. But for this week, we also know it's difficult for some Black women to seek therapy. And a lot of times we're like expected to soldier through stuff just alone,
totally.
You know, like,
because we're the strong Black,
because we're the strong woman. Black woman, like, deal with it in a quiet room in the dark.
Or sometimes it's even cultural.
Yep.
Even the things that we impose on each other, the expectations that we uphold about each other and how we're supposed to manage pain and grief. So that can even make it difficult to seek therapy. But we can create systems of support outside of it, and we often do. And that's what we're talking about today.
Yeah, and it's so great to have Espy Thomas, also known as Edify, here today, because she started an initiative in Detroit called Where Do Black Women Go to Grieve, to help Black women in her community get support through their grieving process. And what I love about her program and what she does is that, you know, she identifies all different types of grief. It's not just the loss of a loved one or someone you know, but it could be like the loss of a job, the loss of a home, and just creating space for us. And I think it's so beautiful. A little bit more about Espy Thomas, also known as Edify, also known as the Queen of Awesomeness. She runs the group out of her restaurant. Her parents opened Sweet Potato Sensations, which she now co-runs with her sister, Jennifer.
Sweet Potato Sensations has become a Detroit staple, revolutionizing the way the world tastes sweet potatoes for 32 years. But outside of her day job at the restaurant and her endeavors helping Black women cope with loss, Etta's also very active in helping local businesses get off the ground, and she's uplifted Black women through other endeavors like co-founding Detroit's largest gathering for Black women with natural hair called Naturally Fly Detroit. Of course she has, because she's Edify. I'm excited to get into this conversation, so let's jump into our talk with Edify. So we're in the studio with Espy Thomas, a.k.a. Edify, Queen of Awesomeness. You created the Where Do Black Women Go to Grieve group. What inspired you to go outside of yourself and create a group like this?
Well, basically, I was looking. So after I lost my fiance, Draper, he had stage 4 colon cancer. He's 37 years old. That was the day before Thanksgiving, 2013. And of course, as anyone can expect, I was just like done.
Yeah.
I was broken. I was done. And one of my best friends was saying to me, you know, you should really get some therapy. You should go find a group. And I'm all about that. So that wasn't really a struggle to get me to go find it or looking for that. But when I was looking, I did not see anybody that looked like me.
Mm-hmm.
Or I was turned away because I was not his quote unquote wife.
Oh man. Whoa. How dare they?
Yeah. What so some spaces, whoa, in terms of spousal bereavement, mm-hmm, I was not his. I didn't walk down an aisle. I didn't wear a white dress. Therefore, I wasn't considered his wife, even though I was his caregiver and I cared for him and took care of him into his last moments. Mm-hmm. So that was devastating itself. And so when you lose a partner, every loss is different, but a loss is a loss is a loss. But it's just, they all have different levels. Mm-hmm. And so you want to just, for me, I want to be around other people that had experienced a loss of a partner to really be able to understand what I felt like I was going through. And when I went around, looked at a lot of different groups, hospice places, Gilda's Club, a lot of different places, there were no Black people.
Mm-hmm. And what did you notice specifically about those spaces? Like, what was it that you needed that wasn't there? Aside, like what is it about all white grieving spaces that made you not feel good?
I'm not gonna say I didn't feel good because I did land on one after I was searched because I needed it. But I just felt like I had to be a version of myself. I wasn't able to be my full, authentic self in that space.
From there, what inspired you to, instead of just saying, this is something I wish I had, to actually doing it and creating a community space to allow, right, Black women to grieve together?
Right. So let me just back up a little bit. So I was taking my fiance to the hospital for the last time. I wheeled him into the hospital. And we will pass this room of girls who are like screaming, hollering in the hallway. And at that moment, someone had just died. And I thought to myself, where do they go? That's a baby mama. That's a sister. That's a girlfriend. That's a side chick. That's whoever, right? Mm-hmm. They just pack up from the hospital and go home. And where do they go? Like, who gives them help if they're not someone of significance? And I thought about that before he even passed. And the stigma in the Black community is you just go to church. There's nothing wrong with going to church. Like, that's fine, too. But we need something in the physical space. And I'm always a doer. So I'm very much a creator at all times. And if I don't see it, then I feel like I have to create it. But that's such a sensitive subject. It's so sensitive. And I wasn't ready. So it took me a couple years to really get to a point where I was ready to even decide I wanted to do that. And what did it take to actually do that? And I know I have a business with my family that we've been around for the last 32 years. People love us. They trust us in the neighborhood. And I knew I had a free space I could utilize to also not only just be a restaurant, bakery, cafe, but also be a hub in our neighborhood to affect some sort of change. And I wanted to make sure I also did it the right way, that I didn't want to just show up myself and not have any tools, no references, no nothing. So I found one of my, reached out to a friend of mine, was not a friend then, was a friend now, I just happened to meet her, and she's a community counselor, Patrice Lucas, Indigo Transitions, very much a boots on the ground, community-based counselor, meet you just where you are, and we came together and made this thing happen.
What compelled you to create a space for people to process grief and community instead of alone, one-on-one? Was it an experience that you had that you found in talking to a therapist one-on-one, there was something better about being in a community of people and sharing what you were going through versus dealing with it, right, internally?
So this is our introduction to mental health. I feel like in the Black community, we don't have an introduction on what it even looks like. Mm. So this is a very, I always say bare bones because it's not bare bones, but to give people a thought on, if I did want to get individual counseling, what would this even look like? If I did want to open up and share about something that's going on with me that is so beyond me, I can't continue to keep this inside, it's killing me, what does it look like to go to a group set? We had a situation, so wherever we have group and there's someone that has experienced a suicide, that's always very, very tricky. There's a whole nother layer when someone's experienced a suicide. And we had two women that came, and one woman was okay with sharing that her husband had committed suicide. The woman sitting next to me, she didn't want to share, so we passed by her and went around. When the woman shared her husband committed suicide, this woman started crying out of control. And I'm just a little worse than, okay. Something she said sparked. We came back around, and she said, because she shared, now I want to share that my husband also committed suicide. And I felt like I didn't belong here because everybody had experienced death where somebody had cancer or a heart attack or whatever. And until that other woman shared, she didn't feel comfortable. So there's power in our there's power in our pain, there's power in our stories, and to be able to share, there's this validation when somebody else says the same thing that you're saying. You can find comfort in that. I feel that other cultures, white people, they talk about mental health. They talk about the Betty Ford Clinic and rehab and things like that. That's a conversation at the dinner table or just in life. We don't talk about that. So we're killing ourselves, praying it away, and that's not enough. And so I felt that we need a sister circle of women that could come together and talk about our living losses and our physical losses. Mm-hmm. And it's really showed up to be pretty powerful work. It's heavy, heavy, heavy work, but it's necessary work. Every time I feel like I want to give up and nobody wants this, nobody needs this, then there's a story that comes through, or there's someone. A lot of the family must come to our group to process through their grief, because their family sometimes is just tired of hearing about it. Years and years later, just tired of hearing about the story.
So you said that sometimes it feels like nobody needs this, nobody wants this. What has been the response, you know, to providing this group?
It's been overwhelming. I mean, when Dre first passed, I was very vocal on social media about this passing. I was very, because people see me in the fashion and hair light. It's like, oh, nothing ever bothers her. Nothing ever happens. And so I was very vocal on this, on where I was. And people from all across the country literally were inboxing me. Are you going to do a podcast? How can I chime in from another city or state and be a part of this group? So it's really been overwhelming when it first started. And then, of course, in the city of Detroit, women just trying to want to get to me, get to Patrice, to actually come to the group on a certain day. It's really been great. Like I said, it's heavy because you hear these stories all the time, but it's necessary work. We work with women from that have had abortions to stillborn, full-term births, and the child has passed away during labor. I mean, to murders. I mean, every single thing, to losing a sex drive, losing your home, losing your resources, angry at men because of things that have happened, molestation, rape. I mean, any kind of loss. You can loss of mobility. Mm-hmm. You get a walk, now you're in a, I mean, all kind of losses across the board. They usually are coupled with a physical loss as well.
That's so profound to me, because I think a lot of times when we think about grief, we only think about death or transition from this physical form. But there's so many things that we can grieve. And I think especially for Black women and Black religious women, we are taught to bear it.
Carry on.
Carry on. And it is a sign of strength, how much you can bear.
It's
but it's killing us.
It's quite literally killing
us. It's quite literally
killing
us. And how like grief will manifest in your body and you ache or you're tired because we're carrying a load of grief. So what was there a moment in your life or in your grieving process where you felt that you could breathe or exhale? Like for me, my father passed away when I was very young, when I was a child. And I struggled with breathing after because I became obsessed with thinking about like to breathe is to live with breath. And then when you actually think about breathing, you can't breathe.
Right.
And it was something that carried with me of like, how do I get over this? How do I move on? How do I process in a way that it still felt like I couldn't breathe? And once I like became in communication with like my ancestors and stuff, it felt like an exhale of like, this is a part of me I can live. And I'm wondering if you ever had in your process of grief and it feels like a weight.
So I wasn't sure if it was 1 or 2 years after Dre passed, I started this Afro-Cuban dance class in Detroit. And because grief had manifested in my body, like literally I wasn't able to open my legs to stretch for my workouts past a very minimal point. I mean, it was ridiculous. My hips were so tight. I was in a dentist chair every month because I had a tooth, because I was grandma tooth that night. My face was hurting. So grief had literally manifested in my body to the point I was in pain, right? And so I wanted to get in my body and just move through this grief a whole different way. So I did this Afro-Cuban dance class with these skirts and we're dancing. And it's literally in that class that I got in touch with my ancestors, that I really understood that although Dre is not physically walking on this earth with me, he is ever part of my existence, who I am, and also a guardian angel who walked with me. So I was able to understand it differently, and I was able to understand he's an ancestor. So I honored that differently. Just death seems so final, so permanent, but just adding the ancestral piece to it just gave me another, just like a new light to actually understand it.
Is that a part of the counseling to get physically into your body? Like, what does it look like to approach this grief counseling?
So the work that we do, that's something that we're looking forward to actually adding. Our group is completely donation-based. We have no funding whatsoever. And so when my bakery sponsored the space, and whatever money that people contribute to buy things during that day that we're open for the group, that goes right back to the group. So that's something we're trying to get funding for right now, is altar building, Afro-Cuban dance, so just getting in your body, African dance, journaling. I can't even list all the other things we're working towards, because all that is part of our cultural. Mm-hmm. We did do an ancestral altar talk, because for some people that's spooky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let me tell you this quick story. We had a lady come into our group, and she had lost her mom long time ago. I think she was 12 or 13 years old. Her mom was murdered. And she don't really remember her mother like that vividly. But she was trying to just deal with the death of her mother and a lot of different things. And she said, you know what? I went home one day and I got a table and I put a cloth on it and some flowers and some candles, picture of my mom. I said, that's an altar. And she was like, what? So we're doing things that are already innate to us already, and not even knowing what to call it, because we think it's scary or spooky. So just kind of just giving people language and putting a name to things that they're already doing.
What have you learned personally through this process of starting this group and helping other people? What has it given to you?
Oh, Lord. A lot of responsibility. Definitely responsibility. What else has it given to me? It's given me a platform to be authentic, to talk about it. Because at one point when I first started it, I was scared to just say for Black women. I got a lot of pushback. I got a lot of pushback for, well, you should say it's for everybody. And why is this for everybody? We all grieve, and I get it. But the spaces, when you go to other spaces and there's no one that looks like you there, you have to create something for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You have to authentically have sacred spaces. So definitely it's given me more balls to say, this is for Black women authentically, and you don't have to like it. So that's definitely something. And in addition to that, we've done different trainings. We go all the places, Patrice and I, to get different certifications. And it's also been very intriguing to watch other people respond to the work that they were doing and the questions that they have about, what we're doing and how we don't budge on certain things that we practice and what we do. We don't apologize for it either.
I also, just in thinking, when we thought about this subject for the podcast and we thought about grief in relation to our Blackness, and there's our personal grief, which is like, for me, the loss of a family member, the loss of like a job, a
right.
home, but
mm-hmm.
there's also a collective public grief that we
community
experience
grief.
As
mm-hmm.
Black
yes.
people
yes.
through the hands of the system.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how you confront through your work that duality of all of the forms of grief that we carry in our experience of Blackness and how we process and move through them.
Right. So we talk about it. We actually put a name to it. A lot of times, even if someone in group might not say it per se, I might say, when Nipsey Hussle was murdered, that affected me.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, and so then it gets people, because they feel like if they didn't know him personally, they have no right to feel affected or saddened by this. Or if somebody on your block got murdered and you saw it, or you either would just live next door to this person, or your dentist died, or someone's been in your life for a long period of time, we have the right to feel that way. But I don't think we've had the language to even know that that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're being told that, Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
Anybody, Prince, people
Sandra
are
Sandra Bland.
When Sandra Bland died,
I was like, she's my age. This was
traumatic.
Yeah,
and you start to think about this stuff
yeah.
and people are affected. And I think that when we give people permission to be affected by it,
mm-hmm.
then people can say, you know what, thank you for letting me feel sad that this has happened. And it's just like when my fiance passed and his sister, who has now passed, said, I think you're traumatized. And I was like, traumatized? I'm not traumatized. I'm thinking trauma is you were in a traumatic car accident, mm-hmm. you've possibly been raped or something traumatic, gunpoint, somebody pulled a gun at you. It's trauma is whatever has happened to you that you believe has traumatized you. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even understand that. Now I have the language to know that that was a traumatic situation that I experienced and I was traumatized and still do have some trauma to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen this experience creating a ripple effect in your community of like, once you empower someone to bear witness to their vulnerability or truth, that is creating a bigger impact in your community? Because I imagine a woman who goes to group who learns to understand and process and be open with her feelings, that's something that she'll share with her child or with her other friend, and how it's sort of the work that you're doing is much bigger than the group, and can you see it in your community?
Right. So when I hear that question, I see people that bring somebody with them. Like, this is for you, girl. You got to come with this group. I have people that bring their friends with them or try to trick their mamas and daughters into coming to group with them. There's also people that have broken off and started their own group because they wanted something more Christian focused or more focused on a certain type of healing or a certain type of loss. So it's giving people permission to actually do what they wanted to do in the first place. And just people are talking about it. Like they'll call to the shop. They'll ask me questions. Like they feel more comfortable with talking about it. If they're in a space where they're not feeling well, they may come to the bakery and say, hey, it's Espy here. I need to talk. So it's really empowering people, I think, to seek help and to ask questions and to try to figure out what's happening so they can get some services.
So I want to talk to you more about where your life is now and how you move through the world now since you've been dealing with your grief, but we need to take a quick break and we'll talk about that more when we come back.
Start clean with Clorox because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah. Of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah. That happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Capella University is rethinking higher education. With their game-changing FlexPath format, you can earn your degree on your schedule, so you can fit education seamlessly into your life. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
And we're back. So, Espy, what does your life look like now, you know, as you move through the world with this basically... you know, new sense.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. Well, how's my life look like now? It's, oh, Lord. Let's see. I mean, I do a lot. I'm super busy. I do a lot of community work and natural hair. It's always around empowerment. It's always dealing with traveling, empowerment, Black women, business. I think more intentional. I have this thought process where, I just want to live now. Like, I want to leave it all. I want to leave it all on the dance floor. Mm-hmm. It's my time to slide into home base. I want to be bloody and scarred up. I've lived my best life. Draper passing really has changed the way I move. I just want to, love now, do it now, and just experience everything now. I dress how I want to dress. I do what I want to do. I move authentically in work and business. People like, I said, when I show up, you know, I'm going to show up now just like mm-hmm. this. So don't try to ask me to change or to do anything differently, because I'm not going to do that, because I have to be myself. So I think it's giving me just more power to be who I want to be, and that, and letting that be okay.
Entrepreneurship seems like it's a very important thing, as far as it's like in your blood for, with your family, and it's very right. important to what you do now. So why do you think entrepreneurship has become such a key avenue for you to do the work?
I think because I can make my own rules. I have to ask myself. I don't have to ask anybody else what the hell I want to do. I do it myself. And I love also having a business in the neighborhood. Because there's people that look like me around here that need different things, and I can create the activities, the events, the things in our own space. We just don't pack up and go to the suburbs and live. Like, we actually serve this community. So I love being able to make my own rules, create my own events, and serve my people.
This just hit me, and I wrote it down, is that your business is a part of a long legacy of Black entrepreneurs participating in Black liberation, like whether that was from restaurants allowing places for civil rights leaders to meet in yeah. private and plan, to you opening a space where there can be collective healing, because our healing is tied to our liberation. So when you see, mm-hmm. have you ever taken a moment to step back and be like, whoa, I am in a legacy of Black business leaders that are liberating our community?
Nope. A lot of times, to be honest, a lot of times I'm just doing it. I'm doing what I think I'm supposed to do. And then I talk to somebody like you who will say, do you know what you're doing? And I'm like, oh, what am I doing? And they give me the language to put to it, because I'm just doing what I feel like needs to be done. And then someone like yourself will give me a title for whatever it is. But that's dope what you just said.
You're just doing you.
Yeah, I'm just doing it because you just have to get the work done. There's so much work to be done. So many people that need things. And I'm also the vice president of our business association over here. And so I just see the neighborhood a little bit differently. And I just don't want to be a place that opens up and closes and doesn't do anything to help the people that they serve, or the neighborhood that they're sitting smack dab in the middle of. So when I see these murdered and missing signs of Black people around the city, I mean, Black and white people around the city, we have to do something about that. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like we can't just live in a community and have a business and not address that, and not have training on trauma, and not have training on grief support, and not being able to help people that you serve. I just see that a little bit differently. So I see business as business and almost like a ministry as well.
Mm-hmm. I feel like whenever we read about Detroit in the news, it's mostly negative, frankly. And yeah. What's been going on in the community that's been good, that's positive, aside from people like you and yourself? Do you see people, you know, getting on the bandwagon of let's make positive change in our own community?
Hell yeah. Detroit is super dope. Mm-hmm. I'm always advocate for the city. I tell people all the time, Detroit has been in winter. We all have seasons. And even though we're in winter, there's still things happening underground. There's still things going on. The tree is still moving. It's just cold outside. Some winters last longer than others. Ours has lasted a little bit longer. Everybody can't stay for this time. And so, yes, there's some parts of Detroit that there's no houses, or there's houses that need some work. And there's parts of Detroit that are banging and buzzing, and everybody's talking about it. So I think there definitely are people like myself in every community, on the ground, boots on the ground, working to make beautiful things happen. The media does not always display that. They want to go to the poorest, sickest, abandoned street in the city of Detroit and say, this is what Detroit looks like.
Yeah.
And that's not the case.
Some of the most progressive activism, I feel, is like coming out of Detroit, like through the work you're doing in community places like Detroit Media Project.
Right.
Which is doing like really amazing work. Have you always felt called to do this work in your community, or was Draper's death the catalyst for this work? Or were you, even from being younger and before, did you always know that this was your calling or this was your line of work?
Not necessarily. I'm always a gatherer of people. So I like to bring people together. And I do that in with the natural hair space, with the grief space, with business. I just didn't know where it was going to land, but I've always gathered people together. And funny enough, when I was in college, I was actually a grief support counselor for children who had experienced a traumatic loss of their sibling or a parent. Totally forgot about that. Like, this is 20 years later, like full circle. Didn't even really realize it until it hit me one day. I was like, wait a second, I did grief work a long time ago. Huh, this is interesting. I was raised in an Afrocentric community-based church. So I guess it's kind of in my system, in my blood a little bit, but I just do what comes natural and it just comes to me naturally.
What advice would you give for someone who is grieving but doesn't have a space like this in their community?
I definitely would say, I think we're the first of its kind, to be honest, a culturally specific grief support group. I've had people reach out to me that want one for Muslim women, for a lot of other different women. There are different cultures and religious faiths. I would say do some online research. And if not, if you can't find a group, to just get individual counseling and individual therapy. They don't have to walk that road by themselves. As Patrice was saying, this is her quote, there is no lack. Mm-hmm. There is no lack. And if we open our mouths and say something, there's usually someone to be able to meet that need. And so that might sound kind of corny, but that would be my first thought in my mind, is just to reach out and look for some sort of therapy if there isn't a group of this kind around.
We like to end every episode by asking our guests, what is your secret?
Ah, what is my secret?
Thriving to joy, to life, to being your full self.
I am my first canvas. I paint myself first. If I can do anything else with the world, I am my first canvas. Before I can do anything else with anybody else, I have got to do it to myself first. I love to dress. So when I get up, I stretch the canvas across and I paint myself. And that's how I'm able to, if you will say, address the world, attack the world. I live in a spirit of abundance. My hands open to give and to receive. I am an offering to myself and to the world. So that would be my first thoughts on what's my secret.
Ooh, I love it. That was absolutely beautiful.
That I'm like still writing down the everything that you just said. That was, I just want to say thank you. I think that the work that you're doing is so fundamental and important to our liberation. And it's huge. And I wish that we could create spaces like this all over, because it's needed.
Plan.
Yeah. What's
the plan.
What is the plan? What is next? What is next for you?
So in Detroit per se, we want to do a huge, and I'm actually sitting in the place that we want to do this bigger event, but just a community wide healing event where people can come and see the actual counselors for themselves, get the resources, know where to go to get therapy or treatment or whatever, or groups, have panel discussions, have a release at the end of the night. And also I thought about doing some community-wide, I haven't really fleshed it out yet, but like not a funeral, but a service to just release everyone who has passed, experienced some type of loss, just a community-wide service or something to that nature. But just wanted to shine more of a light on death and on passing, people transitioning, and to give people the resource and the access to what they need to be able to walk a better life. But this is hard. If you have not processed your grief, you can't breathe. Mm-hmm. There was a rock in my throat for so long. I could not tell this story. I could not breathe. I never thought I'd be 32 years old and have lost a whole husband. So just wanted to continue to give people the language and to meet people where they are, so they'll know that they're not by themselves, that at least somebody experienced that same thing.
Incredible. And where, if people want to learn more about where do Black women go to grieve or support or your work, where can they go?
Right. So we have a Facebook page. It's Where Do Black Women Go to Grieve. That's a private group that if they are experiencing loss or grief, they can join the group. We have to answer a couple questions to be able to be a part of the group. We also have like a regular like page, Good Grief Detroit, and just email goodgriefdetroit@gmail.com for any other. We do have a website. I think it's just goodgriefdetroit.com. But again, we're really grassroots. We're really just out there trying to make it happen. And we also have a PayPal too for donations. goodgriefdetroit@gmail.com is our PayPal address as well. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for being you and the work that you're doing in the world and for taking the time to be so open and share with us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. I appreciate it too. Later.
Bye. Bye. So we've just finished wrapping up our interview with Espy Edafly. And, you know, one of the things that strikes me about both Espy and Keisha is that they've been through it.
Yeah.
And through going through the process of grief, whether it is losing children or losing a partner, they've been able to channel that and to work to help other women.
Yeah.
And I think that that is just such power in the nature of just like Black women. That's like, I'm not going to go through this pain and this experience for naught. How can I also help other Black women heal?
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is just so beautiful.
It is. A lot of what both of them said really struck me. But one of the things that I really loved that Espy talked about was about living loss, because I feel like that's something that we never talk about. We don't put it in the basket of grieving. And I'm so glad that she talked about that. Like, if you feel like, I mean, if you have a loss, you grieve it, you know, whether it's death or something that happens in your life, like a job, like you said, or like, you know, losing a home or something like that.
Yeah,
it really puts into perspective for me the ways that we heal, you know, even by just like naming something.
For me, it just felt really reassuring to listen to them both say that it's just like, you're still going to have good days and bad days, you know, like you're still going to have these moments where you're just like, oh, I'm completely gutted by this, but to know that that's okay too, and to have a space to be able to talk about that. Espy said something that for this episode is going to be my word of the week, which is just the philosophy. I think a lot of times in the state of grief, at least in my personal experience, sometimes it is hard to experience gratitude.
Yeah.
I'm finally getting to the place that I'm not like this anymore, but for a very long time, I lived my life in what ifs. Like, if this huge thing that impacted me didn't happen, where would I be? What would my life look like? And you can't operate from a space of gratitude if you're thinking of lack and scarcity.
Yeah.
And she said, which is my word of the week, I live in the spirit of abundance. Mm-hmm. My hands are open to give and receive.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's like an important thing to always remember, that even in the space of grief, I can still live abundantly. Mm-hmm. I can still give and receive and transform through this very difficult thing that's happened.
Yeah, that's exactly what I had as well. I have it underlined, abundance. I love what she said. It also made me think, though, that, you know, not everybody reaches that point or has reached that point, and it takes a long time to get to that point, and it don't have to look like what it looked like for her, you know. So that's my word of the week as well, is abundance. And I think that that's a very blessed place to get, and I really hope that, you know, a lot of us can get there.
Yeah, blessed place to be. That's a good way.
That's
of
a blessed place
it.
To be, man. Well, what great conversations.
I feel like this episode is so important, and I really hope if anyone is listening at home is just going through grief, that they were able to take something out of it for themselves, and just to know that you are okay wherever you're at in this process.
Wherever you're at.
You're okay.
Even if you don't feel that abundance every day, even when you get there, we're only human.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
for listening. And we hope that you join us again next week, and we'll be here.
We're going to be Black, too.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye. The Secret Lives of Black Women is a production of Stitcher. We're your hosts, Charlotte Lariston and Lauren Domino. Our producer is Taylor Hosking. Our senior producer is Stephanie Karayuki. Our editor is Gianna Palmer. Special thanks to our Chief Content Officer, Chris Bannon, and our recording and mixing engineer, Andy Kirstens. Make sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter @SLBW. See you later.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
I need the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.